but I want to read the Genesis text and let that be our text for today. And I'm wanting to share with you on this text about God's faithfulness and God's generosity and how it's never too late. It's never too late to start. It's never too late to turn back and to rewind and to take a new path. I'm going to read this from the Message, so it may be hard for you to follow, but I wanted to use the language of the Message, which is a really rich translation, paraphrase in some ways about of the Bible. I encourage you to read from different versions, and the Message is has some rich imagery in it that helps us to open up and expand how we see a text or how we hear it. And so I'd like to read it from the Message today, beginning with Genesis 32, verse 22. Listen to these words for the word of the Lord. But during the night, he got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He got them safely across the brook along with all his possessions. But Jacob himself stayed behind. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. And when the man saw that he couldn't get the best of Jacob as they wrestled, he deliberately threw Jacob's hip out of joint. And the man said, "Let me go. It's daybreak." And Jacob said, "I'm not going to let you go until you bless me." And the man says, "What's your name?" He answered, "Jacob." And the man said, "But no longer. Your name is no longer Jacob. From now on, it's Israel," which means God wrestler. "You've wrestled with God," he said, "and you've survived it." Jacob said, "And what is your name?" And the man said, "Why do you want to know my name?" And then, right then and there, he blessed him. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means God's face, because he said, "I saw God face to face there and lived to tell the story." The sun came up as he left Peniel, limping because of his hip. And Jacob looked up and saw Esau coming with his 400 men. He divided the children between Leah and Rachel and the two maidservants, and he put the maidservants out in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. And he led the way. He led the way. And as he approached, his brother bowed seven times, honoring his brother. But Esau ran up and embraced him, held him right, and kissed him. And they both wept. Then Esau looked around and saw the women and the children and those who were with him. And he said, "And who are these who are with you?" And Jacob said, "The children that the Lord has seen fit to bless me with." Then the maidservants came up with their children and bowed. Then Leah and her children also bowing. And finally, Joseph and Rachel came up and bowed to Esau. And Esau said, "What's the meaning of all those herds that I saw as I met them?" Jacob said, "I was hoping that they would pave the way for my master to forgive me, to welcome me." Esau said, "Oh, brother, I have plenty of everything. Keep what is yours for yourself." And Esau and Jacob said, "Please, if you can find it in your heart to welcome me, then accept these gifts. For when I saw your face, it was as if the face of God was smiling at me. Accept the gift that I have brought for you. God has been good to me, and I have more than enough. Jacob urged the gift on him, and Esau accepted. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Jacob had wronged Esau so long ago and had dreaded this contact with him, had dreaded this meeting, had lived in fear of it, and now, all of a sudden, they're meeting, and Jacob trembles. He trembles so much that he hides behind his family, and he sends them on across the river, and he stays back on the other side to spend the night by himself, and what happens? Except that the Lord comes to him in the form of an angel. The Lord's message comes to him by this messenger with whom he struggles and fights and wrestles and who eventually touches him on the hip and causes him to be lame for the rest of his life. And so Jacob now suddenly is put into his place. He's now humbled. And as he seeks to move ahead to the other side, to rejoin his family, and to pursue this path toward his brother whom he has wronged so long ago and with whom he has been at odds for decades, Jacob, now in his newfound humility and his newfound courage, steps out in front and puts his family behind him in the protected place. This is a story of siblings. I'm sure that many, if not most of you, have siblings. Some of you may be an only child, and you may not understand how this works. But with siblings, there is always some rivalry, always some competition to go along with the love and care. I saw some of you smiling as I said that. If you're from a large family, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I want to share with you some insights today about this text. Genesis is full of stories about family. It's stories about brothers and sisters that come into competition and even conflict with each other. It's not uncommon after we read the tragic story of Cain and Abel, where only one of them survives. We come quickly to the story of Ishmael and Isaac, one favored and one not. Ishmael was Abram's first son, born not to his wife Sarah, but to her Egyptian slave named Hagar. According to Genesis, there was a bitter rivalry between those two mothers and between their sons. And Hagar and Ishmael were treated terribly, while Sarah and Isaac had privilege and were given every advantage. But God intervened and made it clear that if Abraham and Sarah failed to love Hagar and Ishmael, that God would still care for them, and deeply so. A lot of years later, Abram's grandson, Jacob, was caught up in this bitter sibling rivalry with Esau, his twin brother, but who was a little bit older and therefore the object of Jacob's jealousy. As the heart of their conflict was the belief that God loved Jacob and hated Esau, they based this belief that Jacob was uniquely favored and that he was entitled to take advantage of everyone around him, especially including his disfavored brother Esau. He seemed to get away with this kind of trickery again and again. For many years, the two brothers lived apart, maturing but still alienated from each other because of the conflict. During that time, Jacob married two sisters, remember? Rachel and the disfavored one named Leah. Leah became mother of six of Jacob's children, and later, when Rachel bore Joseph, he became one of the favorites. Jacob struggled He struggled with his family. Sometimes things were out of control. His sleepless night on one occasion of inner wrestling seemed like a struggle that we all could understand. Sometimes we wrestle to get our own way. But like Jacob, we struggle with old habits. Even those habits that aren't working for us anymore are sometimes hard to give up. Like Jacob, we agonize through long nights sometimes. And sometimes we're held in a headlock by despair, fearing that it's too late for us, or too much has passed, and there's no hope for a new beginning. So, hour after hour through this night, Jacob wrestled. And it became apparent that he was not just wrestling with the dark night, that he was not just wrestling with himself, but that he was wrestling with an angel. Perhaps with God Himself, who appeared to him. But it was not a sad ending, because in spite of that struggle, Jacob emerged from that moment with something brand new. And it wasn't just some part of his life, it was his whole identity, for his name was different. He emerged from that with a new name, Israel, which means God Wrestler. And he received an injury in his hip to humble him. A lifelong memento of that long night's struggle. Jacob was all ready now to face his brother. Instead of trying to trick Esau, as the old Jacob might have done, this new Jacob sent Esau a huge supply of gifts to honor him. Animals, livestock. And when he finally met Esau face to face, Esau had his chance to do Joseph in, to do Jacob in. Now the older twin could really get revenge on his upstart younger twin for all of Jacob's tricks in the past. Esau could treat Jacob to a taste of the disdain and contempt that Jacob had repeatedly poured out on him. But Esau didn't do it. Esau surprised everyone. He made it clear that he wasn't holding a grudge. In fact, he had prospered in his life. He barely remembered the trickery that Jacob had executed on him. Esau had already long ago let go of it, and Jacob was the one that had been miserable in his suffering. Jacob was so touched by Esau's forgiveness that he said these beautiful words, "Truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God." In the face of the other, Esau, Jacob discovered a brother, his brother, Esau. In the face of the one everyone assumed that God hated, God had been revealed. What a story! Even though Jacob had learned an important lesson that day, sibling rivalry had a resurgence in the next generation. You remember that Jacob had 12 sons, and one's name was Joseph, next to the youngest, and he was resented by his 11 brothers because he was favored by his father. That's not new. Abel was favored over Cain, Sarah over Hagar, Isaac over Ishmael, and Rachel over Leah before him. In fact, Joseph dreamed that one day his brothers would grovel before him. That doesn't set well with your older brothers. And eventually, driven by the resentment of the disfavoredness that they felt, they plotted to kill him. You know the story. At the last minute, they decided to sell him as a slave instead to Egyptian traders. And Joseph rose from slavery to a place of honor in the courts of the Egyptian Pharaoh. A lot of years later, when the famine in Israel sent the brothers to Egypt as refugees, Joseph had a chance, just like Esau did. He could get revenge on those miserable brothers who had treated him so badly, and he would do it to them as they had done it to him. But like Joseph, like Esau, Joseph made a different choice to favor forgiveness instead of revenge. In this way, Joseph, the victim of mistreatment by his brothers, became a hero. The one everyone cruelly rejected was the one whose kindness everyone needed. If you know your New Testament, that might sound like a familiar story. The one who bore the stripes, the one who was rejected, became the cornerstone. The one from whom would pour fountains of life and new life, fountains of favor, the blessing of God for all people who would trust in Him. These stories of sibling rivalry have deep meaning. These stories with sibling rivalry pulsate with some of the most powerful and radical themes of the Bible. Blessing, power, favor. It's not given for privilege over others. It is given for service, for the benefit of others. How dare we think we deserve more and then hoard it for ourselves. What we have is given to us that we might share it, that we might be blessed to be a blessing to others. The weaker ones, our brothers or sisters, the one who is deemed ugly or dull or disfavored or maybe even illegitimate, is always beloved by God. From Abel to Ishmael to Hagar to Esau to Jacob, even to Joseph, God keeps showing up, not in the victors who have been defeated or exploited or rejected, but in the weaker ones who deserve a chance. These same themes are the heartbeat of some of Jesus' best parables. The parable of the prodigal son, the father who runs out to welcome his runaway younger son. And while the son thought he would be punished, this father did like Esau did. He ran toward him. He ran toward him and fell on him and embraced him and kissed him, showing grace rather than retaliation. He acts just like Joseph did. Not making the runaway grovel as a slave, but welcoming him as a beloved and cared for member of the family. And in the parable of the Good Samaritan, it's the disfavored Samaritan, not the high status priest or the Levite, who models God's love and makes it real. Just like in Genesis, in today's life, the world is full of rivalries and conflicts. We all experience wrongs and hurts and injustices through the actions of others. And we all participate in inflicting wrongs on others. But it's not too late to start over. If we want to reflect the image of God, we will choose grace over humility, over hostility. We will choose reconciliation over revenge. We'll choose equality over rivalry and competition. When we make those choices, we encounter God in the faces of our former rivals and even in our enemies. And we are humbled, surrendering to God and seeking to be reconciled with others. And in so doing, our faces, too, will reflect the face of God. How are you going to make a difference? Where do you need to be reconciled or to help offer reconciliation to another? How can you and where can you reflect the face of God? It's not too late.